Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Shooter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I'm Frank Gao, joined by my co-host Matt Gunlock. Today, our guest is John Treat. He is a member of the Marine Corps shooting team, specifically on the pistol team. He's been there for quite a while. He's been there since the inception of the USPSA slash action pistol team, and he's currently serving as the coach on that team. He's shot everything from carry optics to production, and most notably, he is a left-handed shooter. So if you're watching his match videos, they're not inverted. So, John, welcome to the show. First question I have for you, as a proud Alabaman, what individuals or icons would you put on like your Mount Rushmore of Alabama culture? And why does the slogan War Eagle deserve to be prominently displayed there?
Well, first off, thanks for having me. Secondly, I guess I'm going to have to cut it short if you ever curse me like that again.
Roll Tide.
Thank you. Roll Tide. Alex is going to love that. So I grew up in Alabama all 18 years of my life before I joined the Marine Corps. If I had to neck it down to four things that I would put on my Mount Rushmore, number one, obviously, Nick Saban. He is the best college football coach since Bear Bryant, and we can prove it. Second to that is it gets its own category, is just college football in general. You don't know the rivalry until you go to Alabama during the fall. It is insane. Like, you live with your rivals. Your neighbors might unfortunately be Auburn fans, and then you'll go watch the game with them. And you see them everywhere. The rivalry is very real in the South. That's all we have. We don't have like MLB. We don't have NHL. We have nothing. We got college football. So we live and die by it, and love it every day.
Sounds depressing.
Not during great football season.
Yeah, it gets rowdy.
Yeah, and Alabama usually makes it to the championships, so your season is extended.
Right? Hey, what are the size of the deer there in Alabama?
Slightly bigger than a stray dog.
Oh, that
it doesn't get cold. It is. They usually have nice racks, especially for their size, but it doesn't get very cold, so they don't pack on a ton of fat. Mm-hmm. But they're still nice for the size that they are. To continue the list, like you mentioned, the deer, one of them is definitely the outdoors. The opportunities you have is phenomenal. You have a ton of fresh water, a lot of woods and agriculture. If you want to go farther south, you got salt water. You just have so many opportunities to view the real outdoors, and it's definitely a nice time going on trails. There's mountains up north. Gets a little swampy down south, but a wide variety of the ecosystem, and it's super cool, especially if you ever go down there to travel, just going through the state. You get all different kinds of environments, but mostly hot and mostly humid, especially in the summertime. I guess to add anything else would be the people and the communities that are down there outside of my city of Montgomery, Birmingham, and Auburn because of the university. It's a really good community. Small town vibes, definitely. Everybody knows everybody. They're watching out for each other. And that Southern hospitality is very real. And I do miss it all the time. So that's why I'm excited to eventually go back someday.
Yeah, very cool. Is the fact that the Talladegas, Talladega is where they hold nationals, but it's also where like the Speedway is. Is that completely overshadowed by football? Like, is that just kind of an afterthought?
Again, depends on the time of the year. NASCAR is kind of dwindling. They got a little too political for a lot of people to like. But football, there's no politics. It's you play ball and you got fans supporting it. But yeah, Talladega's got a ton of history. It's one of the biggest raceways in the series or the circuit, I guess. First time going there was actually at Cary Optics Nationals. We had the award ceremony inside the middle, and they have a ton of history up there. It's super cool. If you ever get a chance, even if you don't like racing, highly recommend it. Next Nationals that is there, I would attend just for that, honestly. Super cool experience.
Yeah, unfortunately, the two Nationals that you're attending this year are both in Ohio.
Yeah, which I've been to, feels like 100 times now. I would love to go back home, but I guess I'll just keep going to Ohio. There's corn.
Yeah.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Like, whenever I was on the pistol team, I saw Ohio so many times, it just became really depressing. Like, there's no... I think Ohio has the worst roadways in the country.
That's going to be second to 95. That's the reason I don't like Virginia solely, is 95 and the people that drive on it.
Well, Matt, are you just talking about the way, just how well-kept they are?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like the roads are just really unkempt up there in Ohio.
I mean, we were there a couple weeks ago for Val from the North Coast, and I mean, we had to speed past Amish horse and carriage at least once, and there were some pretty cruddy roads, but also very rural area, so it might be part of it. But so this year, he shot Cary Optics Nationals, and because of how spread out and how early Cary Optics Nationals happens, now you're getting ready for Production Nationals. So you kind of started off in production. But what are some lessons that shooters can take from competing in one of the low cap irons specific divisions?
So with iron sights, you have the fundamentals of aligning your sights, making sure you're not disturbing the sights when you pull the trigger, pulling the trigger straight to the rear. You can get away with that with a strong grip a little bit because you're not going to disturb it as much. With a dot, you can see it move as you're pulling the trigger and you just jerk it back over real quick. So definitely more refinement with some of those principles. Biggest things I learned with production specifically was good stage planning, because you're not going to run it how a carry optic shooter, how open shooter, especially a PCC shooter, you're not going to run it the same. So it's kind of like, this is your game. You're going to have to run it, hit these specific points. And then the second part to it is making every shot count. Because again, low cap, you got 10 rounds. If it's a loaded start, you got 10 plus one. And sometimes you got to plan to go to slide lock, which I've done a few times, especially at Area 8 just this past weekend, planning on it. But luckily, I think both the times I did it, it worked out in my favor. No makeup shots. And then going to slide lock is more likely to happen in low cap. So you have to keep your head in the game, mostly keeping a good attitude about what's happening, counting your shots. It's a lot more thinking while you're shooting versus like carry optics. I'm like, go here, shoot these targets. I have so many makeup shots. It's almost more sloppy, but it's also not. It's also where you can kind of race a little bit faster. But yeah, production is like a lot more focus on your stage plan and making sure you're making your hits count, and especially not just the target. You still want alphas too.
It's misleading because production, if you're a newcomer, production kind of seems like the beginner division. But I mean, you've told me that like it is the beginner division. It's like it's the OG beginner division. But it's punishingly difficult if you do not understand the rules of USPSA and if you're not fundamentally a very sound shooter. So you started off, that was your first division when you start shooting USPSA?
Right.
If you were to carve like a division's path, say for example, like, you know, somebody eventually wants to go in bougie and go into like limited open or something like that in the future, would you still say that they should start in production or low cap?
I wouldn't exactly say production. We've actually spent like hours in the pistol office talking about this. I definitely think some low cap iron sight, just to kind of like, you don't jump in and buy the open gun and be like, let's just see what happens. I wouldn't, at least.
Some people
everybody's
do.
Different. Yeah. Some people do. Good for them. I can't afford that. So I'll start with a low cap, shoot production, shoot iron sights. I definitely like low cap specifically just because you have to focus on your stage planning, because if you can't stage plan, even as an open shooter, you're going to fall apart at some point. Making your shots count. All right, it's not three gun. You have to actually get alphas here
Oof.
In this sport. Yeah, Whoa. I'll throw my disc back.
Wow, typical production shooter. All the shots are on target.
Oh yeah,
two high clusters in the ace.
hey, you know we do have PCSL now.
We do, and I love it. I hope we get to talk about that later. I do love PCSL, but yeah, production would be my favorite one, and then probably start going to carry optics, maybe limited, just to bump up capacity, and then I think like open or PCC, if you want to swing one way or the other, is where you're going to decide which one of those you end up on, and that would be like my tree of USPSA.
Yeah, it makes sense to go from the more limited divisions to the more open divisions. I know I just used two division names in there. We can talk about PCSL. So it's a new format. For those of you who don't know, it's a smaller target. It's a more difficult target. There's two-gun rule set. There's three-gun rule set. We are running half of our matches on Quantico as PCSL matches. But what appeals to you about that format?
Big one is the rules. Everybody says USPSA has too many rules. They kind of do. It is a lot. And PCSL is it's a much shorter rule book. So I could read all of it in an hour, which I did. Mm-hmm. And I understood it because it all made sense, right? So, like, for two gun, competitive and practical. Yeah. And practical is actually practical. They're not like, oh, you need iron sights. Like, I can 7 clicks and I can buy a red dot and throw it on my pistol. It's very accessible. There's nothing it is a competitive advantage, but everybody can afford that competitive advantage now. So most people run red dots. And it's very practical. The capacity thing makes sense, like 30 round mags.
Mm-hmm.
The rules aren't crazy, right? The only thing I don't like is my gun gets bumped to competitive because of a compensator versus a flash hider, but that's the one thing I have to complain about. That's pretty much it. Everything else about it, the targets, they all make sense. How you can easily just flow into making a two-gun match, a three-gun match, vice versa. Yeah, everything makes sense. It flows very good, and it's always fun every time I've shot it.
Yeah, good stuff. Unfortunately, you won't be with us for this next iteration because you'll actually be – well, you're going to Scotland, yeah?
Right, I leave that Saturday.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit. This wasn't in the questions, honestly. It should have been. But tell us about what particular competition you're going to, like who's going with you and how you guys are getting ready for it.
Right, so we're going to pretty much a military match that's going to be Marines from different countries. We're all competing in Scotland. And it's not quite bullseye, but it's not like hit factor based either. It's more like part-time with paper. So this target will appear. You have 3 seconds. It'll be exposed for 3 seconds. Engage it. And either, depending on the sub match, I guess, it'll be either you hit it, it'll fall, or it'll stay up. You have to shoot it 3 times, and they'll grade your hits. So, and a lot of it's memorization. So we have the matchbook, and we have to remember the series of everything that's happening. So some targets will, a 300-yard target will pop up. It'll disappear after a certain amount of time, and then pop up again. You have to shoot it. It'll disappear, and then 200, and then 100 comes up. That'll happen so many times. And then whole different position change, target distance change. But, yeah, still using – we'll be using their weapons, so a bullpup and a Glock. So there's going to be a lot of like, just being thrown into the fire and hoping for the best. But luckily we'll have a week to train to their weapon systems and practice the matches. But so far it's been a lot of physical training, practicing with kit on, and just doing the best we can with what we got. And that's how the Marine Corps is. But we don't unfortunately have a lot of Glocks. We don't have bullpup rifles. So we're kind of limited on those factors. And then obviously range restrictions that prevent like pop-up targets. We have Green mm-hmm. Ivans, but nobody's allowed to operate them, unfortunately. And those requests take a while. So, yeah, just the old Marine Corps saying.
Yeah, that sounds pretty exciting. We might have to have you and some of the other guys on the team back on to talk about that after you get back. But your current role right now is you are the coach of the pistol team. And the group has come a long way this summer, right? Like most recently, Area 8, a couple of them shot really, really high scores. like doing really well against the competition. So when you're responsible for putting together training for a group of really talented and driven individuals, how do you approach that?
All right. So first off, a huge shout out to pretty much the whole pistol team. They're within the time limit. They've already caught up to and pretty much surpassed me. I've only been competitively shooting like USPSA for 3 years, and they're already all like A's or M classes in a fraction of the time it took me. So they're just out there crushing it. I hope I helped to that escalation of lethality, if you will. But whenever I make a training plan, a few things I hit on is obviously the fundamentals, right? Because if you don't know how to grip a gun, a lot of things come harder. You don't know how to line sights or put the dot in the middle of the window, things come harder. So like some drills focusing on that. That's usually towards the start of the season. And then I'll like throw it in there every now and then, kind of refresh it. Another thing is like match specific trends. So I'll read over a match book, and if it has a lot of hardcover, a lot of no shoots, we'll kind of like trend our training towards that and help us practice it before we go into it a little bit more. We try to like recreate to the best of our ability some of the stages for that match. And obviously we have much stricter STZs than a 180 bay, so we have to neck it down and do the best we can with what we got yet again. And then pretty much throughout the training, I'll always try to go over mental game, because that's huge. Like if you make a stage plan, you're like, I don't know about it, then you have until you're the shooter to just make sure you 100% go with it. You saw everybody else do it differently. Do your stage plan, because if you try to change it last second, most of the time it doesn't work out. Sometimes you get lucky, but it doesn't always work out. And then a big thing I kind of learned from this year from Alex was giving that individual time. So every time the last training day before a match is individual time. Confirm your zeros and whatever you need to do. It's up to you. If you're trying to change things at the day before a match, then go for it, but it's probably not working out. I'm not going to force it. It's up to you. You know you best, so you're going to practice those small things that you know you need to work on that you've been practicing all week, and just go out there and figure it out with however many rounds you got, and then always end on a good note. So you do a plate rack. I always have to clean a plate rack before I leave, or make sure I get 2 alpha. Or whatever I do, leave on a good note. So that kind of helps my mental game. If I leave on a bad note, I want to ponder on it all night. And then I want to come back the next day and be like, I got to clean a plate rack now. I'm going to spend all day on it.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. Do you guys ever comb over match footage or just things that you noticed during the match, like trends within the shooters that use it? Like, hey, that's something we need to hit and practice the next week.
Yeah, so we've been trying to do the video, like we'll meet the day after a match and then we'll go over video and analyze, like, all right, who's messing up, like what's your trend that you're messing up, is it your footwork, is it your accuracy. Things get busy, can't always do it, but the times that we have, I'll take that information the best I can and I'll put it in there. So like if nobody can clean up steel and they have a ton of makeup shots, then I'll definitely start throwing out more steel arrays for us to train, different distances, different size poppers, plate racks. Nobody could hit a mover. That's where all the mics came from. Then we'll practice a little bit more with movers. Like we'll isolate it, or we'll just throw in a moving target on a stage that we build, and just refresh it.
Yeah, good stuff, man. And clearly it's been working, because like I said, the pistol team has taken a huge step forward this summer, and excited to see where the guys go from here.
Oh yeah, me too.
So, John, you and I have known each other since April of 2019.
Yeah.
And we met at Marine Corps Championships back then. And I remember we brought you in, like you were one of the guys that we were selecting to come to be a summer shooter. Mm-hmm. And you sat down, yeah, and we're boarding you out. And we're like, you first started out saying, well, I don't really need to be in here because I plan on getting out of the Marine Corps. So you're kind of wasting your time with me, but I do appreciate the opportunity. That's how that started and ended, because we were like, hey, thanks for your honesty. You know, we hope to see you again, but have a nice life. you know, you and I kept seeing each other throughout the summer because at the time you were on Paris Island shooting team. And, you know, you were shooting really well for a stock, basically a 1911 that some of those guns have been around since like 1914. Like they were really old guns. Yeah. You had some ammo. You were probably shooting some hardball ammo in practice, but I think you guys also had some other ammo that was like contracted. And then you guys bummed ammo from us because I remember having to give you guys ammo throughout the season. But yes, you know,
either we shot TZZ or we shot semi-wa. There was not much in between.
Yeah. So, and you kind of started out, you know, your whole shooting career started with Bullseye, and you know, you shot very well. But then come the following year, you know, your plans to get out of the Marine Corps did not change at all. Or your plans to get out of the Marine Corps changed completely, I should say. And you emailed me, and I think you called as well, and saying, hey, change of plans. I want to stay in. Is that offer to come to the team still there? And you're like, absolutely. You ended up coming to the team, but whenever you finally did get to the team, there's no more Bullseye pistol. So what was it like, you know, coming to a team where you were originally recruited for, you know, Bullseye, but now you're going to USPSA, which is something that you were relatively unfamiliar with?
Right. So, you know, that like this meme format, right? It's like panic, calm panic. Well, it all started when Germanello posted for April Fools. This just did. We're getting rid of Bullseye. And I was like, oh no, like my package is going to get revoked. Because it hasn't been approved yet. And then I just like kept reading it. And I read all the tags and it said April Fools at the very bottom. And I was like, oh, thank God. So maybe there's still a chance. And then like after my package gets approved and I'm coming up there, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we're getting rid of Bullseye. And I was like, oh my God, no. they're going to send me to MTC. This is awful. So yeah, I was, yeah, emotional roller coaster with all of that. And then COVID in the middle of all of that, moving, PCSing with COVID was awful. I don't recommend it to anybody. So, but yeah, Okay. Yeah, I got there and they're like, you're not doing Bullseye. You're shooting USPSA. I'm like, all right, cool. What's that? Make this account. It's $50 for like a year or whatever. Made the account, went out there, and then it was Raider and Loreno, Lindsay Adams, and then Kyle was like three gun. Yeah. A bunch of the old crew, out there just practicing. They're like, all right, we'll take you the armor, get you a gun. They gave me a CZ Shadow 2 to shoot like production with. It was one of the old Belmont guns, so they were kind of busted up a little bit. And then they're like, all right, run this stage. And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, we're going to do this beep. It's going to go off, and then you're going to just shoot these targets as you see them. Like, you'll see these from here, these from here, these from here. I was like, all right, cool. I'll try it out. And then, like, three-second draw to build my grip, take my time, and then I was very accurate, right? So I came from Bullseye. I knew how to put the bullets where I wanted them to go. So I ran the stage, and like they were almost every pair was touching in the alpha at every target. But it took me like 50 seconds on what should have been like a 20-second stage because I was a giraffe learning to walk again, just because I was walking around with a gun in my hand. So I had the foundation of marksmanship for accuracy, but I didn't know how to like manipulate the weapon efficiently and move around the stage and use the economy of movement. None of that, all that was foreign to me, right? Got a box on a bench and people tell you all the commands, what to do as it goes along. So definitely a learning curve, but I stuck with it. I had great coaches. I had Sam Loreno, Scott Rader helping me out. Like I said earlier, Lindsay Adams, they were all there helping me out, giving me pointers wherever they could, which was everywhere because I was, again, awful. I was great with one hand on a gun, but as soon as they put two, I forgot what I was doing. So struggle busting like the first year. And then I had to go to OCS. A name had to get thrown out of the hat. I had to go to OCS for about a month where, again, COVID still hanging around. All the candidates that were coming to OCS had to go to a ROM site. So a restriction of movement where they occupy like two or three barracks. and they're not allowed to interact with each other. They stay in their rooms. So we pretty much had to do their laundry, bring in their chow, and then occasionally they go PT after like 2 weeks into it. And then we had duty like every 3 days, and it was awful. But somebody had to do it. It had to be me. And it made sense, like the new guys here. The season's coming to an end. And I don't take it with hard feelings. Like I said, somebody's got to do it, so I'll take the L now. And luckily, when the Reaper comes back around, I don't get picked because I've already done it. So that's kind of a benefit to it. Just get out of the way at the front end.
So how long would you say it took you to kind of finally get your feet under you with USPSA?
Oh, man. I would say, like, going back to the conversation about, like, my tree of which divisions I would shoot, I'd say when I started shooting carry optics is when things started clicking, mostly because a red dot is a great tool. It's not just making shooting easier to shoot faster. It's also, it tells you everything you're doing wrong. So I had a really bad tendency of over-tensing my firing hand. So kind of the con of bullseye was I knew how only to grip with my dominant hand, but now I actually have to use more of my support hand. So training that was a little bit difficult. And then seeing it with a dot made it so much easier for me to correct it, just because the dot is going to keep moving as I'm pulling a trigger in that direction. I'm like, oh, I see what's happening. You can kind of hide it with iron sights, because if it's too bright, too dark in one day, you don't see that minute movement, but a dot will tell you everything you're doing wrong. And also everything you're doing right too. So it's a great training tool. Definitely recommend it for newer shooters. Probably not brand new, because they're like, what am I looking for? Because there is a point where you got to build the index to find it, which is a huge learning curve. And then once you can find it consistently and you're starting to take shots with it, it's telling you everything you're doing. And once I did that, that helped out the shooting game a lot, along with Scott and Sam teaching me how to move around with a gun efficiently on a stage, and working on my stage planning, which came from mostly from production. And like, you're going to reload here because you have 24 rounds in a mag. So don't worry too much about the reload. Worry about the shooting. So all of it's kind of compiling, just coming into a perfect storm of all my stuff from production. Now I have this new tool. I have a dot on my gun. It all just like, yeah, started blending together at the same time. And that was about almost exactly 1 year. It was my first match with a red dot. It was a Mid-Atlantic in 2021, I believe. I got 85% first time ever in a match. I got like 14th place, 85%. And all I did was I just stayed consistent. I was like, all right, don't try anything new. Just shoot my match. Do the best I can, but don't try to push myself. It's not training. This is the match. This is the test. So don't try to overshoot anything. Just do the best I can, but without trying to overthink it.
So kind of reeling and dialing everything back to when you first came in, like, you are a radar repairman. I don't know exactly the terminology, but you repair radars. But you joined the Marine Corps, spent time Parris Island, Beaufort, South Carolina area. And you didn't really have the opportunity to travel. Like, you traveled like where the Parris Island shooting team would send you, which was, you know, Fort Benning, Georgia, Canton, Ohio, and Camp Perry, Ohio. And that's really the only three places you went. But now you're traveling all over the place. You went to Okinawa, first time out of the country. You're about to go to Scotland. You've traveled pretty much across the country, you know, either with MCMX or with shooting USPSA. What's a memorable experience from the MCMX that you've done, and also matches you've shot?
Funny enough, I actually didn't go to Benning until I got on the team, because we had budgeting issues and we were broke on PI. So yeah, we only went to Canton, Ohio, and then Camp Perry, Ohio, and also Putin Bay, but that's a whole other story for a different time.
Yes.
Been traveling. There. Been there, done that. No, I don't have the t-shirt. I lost it somewhere.
We almost left Patrick on the ferry whenever we got off. He fell asleep on one of the bench seats in the ferry, and we forgot him.
That sounds like something Patrick would do.
Yes.
Apparently, I'm his replacement. I'm the strange left-handed person, so everybody's got a replacement. It's a really fun game. Like, who are you replacing? I actually did a little bit of travel as like a Lance Corporal. I got to my unit, and they sent me on it was a journey across the country, but I went to awful places. Nowhere as cool as I do in McMix. So the new radar system that was coming out the Gator, it needed to be field tested. They picked 10 people. I was one of them, just because I guess my detachment needed to throw in a name. I got to go to Baltimore at the Northrop Grumman facility, and I got a month of schooling of the new radar system. See, after that, I went to Cherry Point for a few weeks. Not a huge fan of that place. It's very industrial vibes. It's very different, kind of depressing, but yeah. Beaufort's got some problems too. I went to Yuma for about, I think, 2 or 3 months total. We were out there, one, just testing the system, making sure it works, for about 1 month. And then, okay, the second month, we got tagged along with the WTI. It's the weapons training or weapons and tactics instructor.
Yeah, correct.
I believe. All right, cool. It's been a while. We got tagged along with that as an extra sensor for another month. And then after that, we thought we were going home. And then last minute, they're like, hey, we're actually going to extend you guys to go to Cherry Point again for another week. So they found a way to get us on a C1 or KC-130, flew us from Yuma to Cherry Point, and we had to stay at I think it was Atlantic Field, or no, it was Bogue training.
Bogue Airfield. Ew.
Yeah, that place is awful.
Yeah.
It's worse than Cherry Point itself. Yeah, we stayed there for another week. And we did. Yeah, it was rough. It was just really rough. And we weren't even really needed out there. There was a lot of, again, politics of like people didn't know we were coming. We were bringing this like $50 million radar system. They're like, what are you doing here?
So now
very
that
surprising.
Now that we've talked about all the depressing places that you've been, what are some memorable places you've been and some fond memories that you've had while being on the team?
Okay, so the fun side of it. Definitely Okinawa, first time out of the country. After like 8 years in the Marine Corps, just it's like that sometimes. My job didn't need me to leave the country, so I never did. But Oki, super cool place, a different culture. Would definitely go back there again if I could. And then my favorite part of it was traveling the U.S. One of my favorite ones now is Montana, just coming back from Area 1. Oh, man, the views out there, they don't end. They're phenomenal no matter where you go. Going up into the Beartooth Pass, like seeing just these random ponds out there, snow-capped mountains, it's definitely worth it. I'm trying to convince my brother-in-law to like at least take a bike ride out there because he likes to ride. He did like the Dragon's Tail and everything. And I'll just like, I'll be the pull behind car and bring all the coolers and whatnot. But I would definitely see myself going back out there again.
Hunting trip?
Definitely a hunting trip. They have elk out there. So I am very interested in that.
Dude, I went out to Cody, Wyoming a few years back. It was back in 2020. And we were out in Cody and just driving around. And there are elk sleeping in people's front yards. Just like, what the hell is this? This is awesome.
You know what's hilarious is I know a ton of people that they don't hunt, and that's all the houses where like deer will just show up in the morning of their house and start eating their grass. But here I am, like, please come to my backyard. I have grass at exactly 100 yards, a nice stack of it, which is legal now in my state, so I can say that. Yeah, this year has been phenomenal for travel and for opportunities. Like, we went to Texas, like I said, Montana, and then a lot of Ohio, Pennsylvania, going back to Ohio again. Some people were going back to Talladega for like open Nats, open PCC Nats. And then soon I'm going to Scotland. We have some people going to Greece. Some of the 3N guys are going to Thailand. This is definitely the first year we've done this much international travel. I assume in a long time outside of like the military style matches, like our mosque and the Commando X, all that stuff. So, I can't wait to see like where it keeps going after this, because at this point, the sky's the limit.
No, I'm really excited. you know, I've been wanting to see the team do international travel for a while. I'm glad it's kind of coming back. And yeah, it's pretty amazing, you know, and the guys are crushing it, and I think they're going to crush it out there too.
I hope so. I watch a lot of Eric Groppel videos. I don't know how a man can shoot a CZ that fast, but he is a phenomenal shooter. I'm kind of jealous because he'll be out there, so I have to miss
He's a fucking machine.
He's, yeah, once in a generation talent, I believe, is what most people say. You just remind me of something. So you're a diehard CZ shooter, right? Like, carry optics, that's your gun. Production, that's your gun. How did you arrive at the CZ, and like what makes that platform the gun for you?
So yeah, being required to shoot like military guns, obviously we have the M18, which nobody should shoot competitively because it's not realistic. Don't recommend that. But the P320, we have a bunch of those. We have CZs that we got purchased through a long process. And those are kind of like your two big choices, especially starting out, just because we didn't have a ton of options. Luckily, now we do. We have a gun for almost every division now. And if we don't, we're very close to it as a team. But yeah, I tried the, I started out with a Shadow 2 for production. And then when I went to carry optics, I had a P320. It's basically an M17 with a tungsten guide rod, a different recoil spring, and a Romeo 1 Pro. And that was it. That was our upgraded carry optics gun, a little sweet that we had. Mm-hmm. And I was more focused on, like, what is the dot telling me I need to do? Focus more on the shooting portion of it, not really like it's a whole new gun, I got to learn it. There are different, like, grip angles and the plastic gun versus the metal gun, so there are some minute differences, but the fundamentals of marksmanship are still the same. I'm still aligning sights or putting the dot in the middle of the window. Excuse me. I'm still applying all these fundamentals as I'm shooting the system. But just the grip angle, I don't know if it was just because it was like my first competition gun I got to shoot, or just how it feels in my hands. I just fell in love with it. And as I was shooting the M17, it was just like my side chick over here. I'm thinking about the CZ. I'm like, man, I want to go back to you so bad. If only I could put a dot on you easily. And they came out with the optics ready version. And I was like, here's my money. I got one. I probably paid too much for it, but it was great while I had it. And then I eventually went Gucci gun and spent definitely even more money on a nice CZ that got Cerakoted. I got everything I wanted on it, and I love shooting that one. Super fun. But yeah, that's the big thing is everybody in USPSA, at least, is like, P320 is better, the CZ is better. It's honestly up to the shooter. Like, the gun, you can't really buy performance, right? You can to a degree. If you hand somebody M18 and then you hand somebody a Shadow 2 with a Cajun kit, they're going to like that one better just because it has those things. And you don't have to know what's in it to know that it's better, right? Like, this one, the single action is way better than the striker fire on this thing. But, like, if you get really good at M18 and you understand those minute details of it, and then you transfer over, you learn on it, and then you go to this other gun, you're like, all right, I like this more, or I hate this more. And you kind of, as a shooter, maturing what you like, what you want to personalize if you get your own pistol. And that's what I did. I took the things I liked from a Shadow 2, what I liked from the M17, and then I kind of just picked the Shadow 2 just because it felt better to me. Which is funny. I'm a small guy. That's a heavy gun. And I literally just, like, throw that thing. If you're watching my videos, I throw the gun, and it just kind of takes me with it. So that's my little advantage I use.
So I got to ask, you're getting out for real this time. No more, oh, well, I'm getting out, and then you decide to stay back. And you're getting out for real, and, you know, you're going back home to Alabama. What's on the horizons for you now? Like, what have you got planned?
Yeah, so last time I was dead set on getting out, and the package to come to teams was literally just like a grenade on a CFT. I'm just throwing it and just going to keep, see what happens. And then it eventually got approved, and I'm so glad it did, because I didn't understand how underprepared I was to get out of the Marine Corps. My mindset was, every time somebody asked, like, what do you do when you get out? I was like, oh, I'll just be a cop for a little bit until I get picked up by game wardens. And it's not that easy. Life is never that easy. This time I am way more prepared. I'm saving financially. I'm already doing resumes, job applications. I'm a little bit behind on TRS, but I've already done it before. I do know it's good to do it again because different places have different specialties of how they teach certain things. The one in Beaufort was great. they're a little bit more focused on if you're going to college. But I was just getting out and starting a job, so I still learned tons from it for the, like, the Department of Labor and stuff. So definitely recommend to all the Marines out there, if you're listening, do the TRS. It is actually worth it. The one in Quantico, I don't know. I can definitely vouch for the one in Beaufort. It was actually good. I learned a bunch. I got a lot more set up than I thought I was. But there's still some part that you yourself have to apply of, you got to save money. Like, things are going to happen. You're getting out of one job, going to another. There's going to be that time, that gap where you don't have a financial security. So save your money. Know why you're doing it. Like, I'm getting out because I know that's probably going to be best for my family. I grew up in a great community. My family was great, and that's what I want my kids to have growing up. And I think that outweighs me staying active duty. Yeah, that was the big purpose. That took a lot of, like, conflict within myself of, like, should I get out? But it's definitely better for my family in the long run. So that's why I lean that way. But, like, my meat in the middle was going to the reserves. So I can still, you know, play dress up once a week or once a month on the weekends. And then the backstory too is I'm also lat moving. So my original contract when I first, like, depped in was 0311 in the reserves. And then my 0331 recruiter convinced me to go active duty for 0311. And then a week before I left, they're like, we got this recon contract. And the conversation went pretty much verbatim this. Like, I asked, what does it entail for the recon contract? He said, how well can you swim? I said, pretty decent. He said, you'll be fine. I was not fine. I found out I like breathing air more than I like breathing water. And then again, more self-conflict of, man, the next, they told us the next class that's going to roll through, the BRPC class, is going to be 4 months away. And I was like, oh man, I just want to get to the fleet. So I DOR'd. I hated doing it, but I thought it was the best move for me at that time. So they decided to put me on the longest MOS possible as a 5948 aviation radar technician. Best case scenario, which I somehow got, was 9 months and 29 palms. So as I'm in my second of my third schoolhouse, all of my friends that decided to stay in recon are finally going to the fleet. I was like, oh, cool. Good for you guys. So yeah, a lot of mental torture to myself over some of the decisions I made early on in my career, but I definitely think it worked out. I definitely still want to keep a career in the Marine Corps. Obviously I can't live off of reserve money. So I do plan on going to work for the state level law enforcement agency in Alabama. End game for me is as a game warden. I fell in love with conservation of just the outdoors in Alabama, mostly when my uncle got some property that he let me and my brother-in-law hunt at, and we weren't like, oh heck yeah, let's just go ham on these deer. I mean, they're small anyway, so you got to get a bunch of them to get any deer meat. But we actually, like, planned out a process of, all right, this is the herd size. We were, like, doing our own conservation of the deer population. And then, like, all right, we're going to go for these because they have bad genetics. And we're kind of like managing that area. And it was really cool, like, getting into the weeds of it. And then eventually at some point we got turkey, and then a coyote came. And so I had to kill a coyote. And then I almost killed his friend, but they run really fast when they're scared. So, yeah, I fell in love with conservation, and that's what kind of drove me to push push a game warden. Plus, the office is the outdoors, and I don't like sitting behind a desk. I'd rather be outside, so that's an obvious choice for me versus any job behind a desk. I can't do it. I'm not designed for it.
No. Hey, John, it's been great having you on here. It's been great seeing your growth from before the team to you exiting the service. You know, we built a pretty formidable friendship. I hope to keep seeing you out on the competition circuit. And I'm really excited to see all the accomplishments that you have in the future. So I appreciate you coming on here and talking to us about what you've done and what you plan on doing. So from Frank and I, thank you for everything.
Absolutely. Thanks for finally inviting me.
Well, it was always the plan, man. It just... We always know where to find you, you know?
Yes, the long game. You know where I work. I guess that's true.
We could pick you up whenever we want. No, but thank you. I appreciate it. And for our listeners, we hope you enjoy this. And if you are listening up to this point, just know that there is a giveaway for our 100th episode, which is next Friday. It's a double star 15 and a half inch handguard. They're freaking awesome. Double star core was generous enough to give this to us to give out to you guys. So if you go to our Instagram post and take a look at it, it explains out the rules. So yeah, go check us out on Instagram at Bullets and Bourbon Podcast. And we hope you enjoy this and have a good one.